Hello and welcome to another episode of Everyman Sports. My name is Chad. I'm the owner-operator of this podcast. It's been a while since my last post, my last recording, and that's my last recording was posted May 2nd, so it's been a month. And the reason why, I haven't gotten sick of this or anything like that, but I had a very big life event happen to me. My wife gave birth to our first child, a son. His name is Connor. So that's been kind of taking up my time right now. So, but today I'm joined by my friend Chuck. Hello, Chuck.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good.
Good, good, good. Chuck, you're a Yankee fan?
Yes, I am.
I think you heard about the recent sweep by the Mets over the Yankees.
Yes, I've heard about that. Yes.
Yes. And it's interesting now because in the past they would play three games at, you know, the Mets and then three games at the Yankees. This year they're only playing four games, and it was home and home, two games at Citi Field and two games at Yankee Stadium. So this is the first time that there have been three game sweeps in the past, and, you know, but over a four game series that one team swept the other. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it sounds certainly like there's going to be some gloating going on.
I think it's fair to gloat at least for like a year, because look.
How'd you come up with that number?
I figured that it's probably going to be around the same time that they play this time next year. But I
only play once a year, huh? That's it.
Well, at this point now, because there's an interleague game every day. There's an interleague game, and what they try to do now is because they have the geographic rivals, Mets and Yankees,
yes.
Two teams in Chicago, two teams in LA, stuff like that. So they want to still capitalize on those.
Right.
So it's not like, you know.
We could see the Mets again this year in the World Series, maybe.
That could happen, right? That's unlikely. And that's part of the other part of why the gloating should be okay.
Yes.
Because the Mets aren't going to go anywhere this year. And the Yankees have been very lucky. I mean, they were in first place up until like.
I mean, they got a lot of. I know they have a lot of people hurt.
A lot. Teixeira and Youkilis just came back. So Teixeira was out the whole year so far. Youkilis started the year and then he just came back. So they've got that, and I'm sure there's gonna be more players coming back. We'll see how they do.
Who else is on the disabled list? Is Rivera back? Rivera's back.
Rivera's back. Yeah, he just missed last year with the injury.
All last year, okay.
Yeah, and he's back this year. But Jeter is gonna be out till after the All-Star game.
Wow.
A-Rod's gonna be out for who knows how long.
What about Granderson?
Granderson, he came back. After, I think, a broken forearm in spring training, came back.
Yeah.
Two games after he came back, he broke a knuckle on his hand from being hit by a pitch.
But the story with Cervelli, I know he's out too, right?
He's out too. And, Cervelli's out. I'm trying to think who else is out.
Any idea when he's coming back?
Probably pretty soon. I think it was like a hamstring. Pettit is out.
Those are painful, though. It hurt.
Oh.
I pulled my hamstring once. That's very painful.
I'm sure. I have never had. I mean, I've had Charlie horses, and I've had, tight calves, but never a full-on pull of hamstring. I can only imagine.
Yeah, man, I got it playing t-ball, sliding. You're not supposed to slide in t-ball.
Wait, really? In t-ball, you got it?
Yeah,
hurt?
Yeah. Isn't that embarrassing?
Because
I was really little. You know, stupid.
Well, I know because you're a runner. Like you run a bunch. But yeah. I thought you might have done it that way. I didn't realize you did it so young.
No, I was very young. it was very painful.
I can, especially for so young.
Oh my God! My muscle was just like marble, man. It was like, you know what I mean? It was just, everything was just rigid. It was just pain beyond pain. And, you know, when you're that young, everything is time stretches out. And, you know, and it just, I remember my baseball coach was running to me and it was all in slow motion. It was just like, you know, it was horrible.
Oh, man. I think the worst injury I had ever playing was when I forget how old I was. I was probably a little bit less than 10.
Yeah,
I was playing football up in the town of Ringwood, New Jersey, and it was for the team there. They're called the Ringwood Rattlers, and it wasn't an injury I got on the field. It was off the field. Being a kid, you know, you like the sweets, so I had soda in a water bottle, like with the long straw, plastic straw. So I wanted soda, so I was like, okay, I have soda in this, but it didn't have one of those caps on it. It had broken off. So apparently, what had happened was, because it's, you know, sugary sweet and it's kind of warm outside, a bee flew into, I think it was like a hornet or a wasp.
Oh,
one of the ones with the stings.
Going.
And it flew into the straw.
Oh, boy.
And I was done. And so I went over and I picked it. Practice wasn't over, but, and I picked it up and I put it to my lips and I started to sip and I saw in the straw something yellow come out. I was like, what is that? As I'm sipping and all of a sudden hits my tongue. Ah! ah, the stinger goes in my tongue. I'm like, ah.
Oh, it sounds great. That's wonderful.
But I tell you what, like, what numbed it?
Yeah.
It sounds really silly, but I also had a bag of Frosted Flakes, and so I started to eat that, and the sugar from it, like, helped numb my tongue.
Wait a minute now. What was your reaction? Did you spit the bee out? Did you swallow
it? Oh, I spit it out. I was like, oh, my tongue. What happened to my tongue? And then, like, I think another parent was there, you know, a parent of, like, a friend of mine, like, yeah, I saw bees and wasps flying around. I was trying to shoo them away. I think one got in. You know, my dad was just like, well, that's kind of what you get. You wanted soda at an athletic event where you're performing.
I can see your dad doing that.
Right. You know, it's one thing when it's water, but it's
another. Right, son.
Yeah, well, you know, to that extent, you know, like, maybe next time you should use water, like, you know, the kind of thing where, like, the kid realizes, oh, I don't think that was such a good idea, Dad. Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, perhaps my son might do that, and I might have the same reaction.
You know, a lot are you going to put him in the Little League and everything, or?
If he wants to. I mean, if he's into it. I'm never going to, I don't want to force anything. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm going to expose him to things I like sports-wise.
If you see he has a talent for something, would you push him? Like, maybe you should try this.
There's talent, and then there's interest. Talent only takes you so far. What do you want to do with that talent? You know, if you can throw, say, in the 90s, if you can throw 90 mile an hour, a stick, a ball, anything that travels out of your arm, you know, faster than a car can.
You got a free ride somewhere.
Probably, yeah. But if, you know, he's like, you know what, I have no interest. I'd much rather play, you know, violin or something. Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead. But cool. But then there's the opposite, where the drive is greater than the talent.
Right.
You know, I really want to play, but, you know, I'm average. I mean, there are plenty of guys who play professionally in any sport where it's like, you know, they're opposite ends of the spectrum. Either, wow, that person has really great talent, but they don't have the head for the game, or they're, you know, that's, you know, the scrapper. The one who plays, you know, who, you know, the Rudy, if you will.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Good movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very touching. It's one of those guy films. But, you know, but that's sort of like the drive. You know, your talent might not be the highest, the best, may not be above average, but you have your interest, your want and desire takes you the rest of the way. So whatever he wants to do, he might do a sport that I'm not like a big fan of. He might be
true. Mickey Mantle was pushed a little bit, right? His dad made him practice over and over again.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right. So, do you ever think maybe like if Mickey Mantle wasn't pushed, maybe there would have been no Mickey Mantle?
That's very likely. I mean, he quit. He quit a couple times in the minor leagues. He was like, I can't do this. I can't. And his dad came and, you know, all right, well, let's go. He's like, no, you know. So he kind of pushed him into it.
He told him, you're going to work in the coal mines for the rest of your life. That's what you're going to do.
I remember that.
Put your hard hat on, kid, because this is where we're going now. We're going to go. You're never going to see the sky again. That's when he decided, nah, I'm going to stick with baseball.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing. Some of the best players come from the places where that's your escape. You know, it all started first off with, you know, the coal mines or even just being poor. Just like, well, this is your way out of the poor life. This is your way out of West Virginia or, you know, central or western Pennsylvania or Iowa or the cornfield.
I guess maybe his father saw his son had a golden ticket and he was just trying to make his son appreciate the fact that you have a golden ticket. You don't have to do this. You don't have to work in a mine for the rest of your life. You can just play baseball.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even though, I mean, like, they made a good living back then, but they didn't make, like, a ton of money, right? They just made, like, if they got bonuses for the playoffs, but they weren't, like, super, super rich, were they?
No, they only, the first person to make, like, $1 million in a contract wasn't until, like, the 80s.
Mm.
So, you know.
I didn't know it was that late in the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, before, you know, like by the 20s and the 30s, it was
70s. There was nobody who got over $1 million.
Maybe accumulated over $1 million,
but not a year.
No,
not for not a yearly. Year.
No.
Wow.
There was, you know, it was six figures by that point. It was six figures. But I mean, was it? I was hearing recently. I think it was George Sisler, great hitter, early part of the century in the 1920s. He made $9,000.
And what year was this again?
This was like 22.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you know, comparatively with inflation, I mean, that's still a pretty hefty paycheck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'd say it's probably close to like a little like six-figure salary, right? Something like that.
Probably.
$9,000 a year.
Well, if you think back then.
Back then, like, cars were like a couple hundred bucks.
Well, hot dogs were a nickel. Games were 50 cents.
Right.
You know, a dollar if you wanted, like, primo seats.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, anytime you see that, you're like, wow, that would be a lot of money now. But at the same time, still just to think, like, okay, that's the best you did. So.
And so it's, I mean, for the amount of money that they made, the stadiums and they made, you know, the rate, you know, everybody else that made money off of them, yeah, that definitely wasn't a fair share.
No, definitely not. Because the owner, you know, back then there was no free agency. There was whatever the owners deemed the players could have. Because it couldn't really go anywhere. That's why all those rival leagues started. You know, it finally, it took a while. The first free agent wasn't until like 1970. Kurt Flood. It was the challenge of this thing in the contract called the reserve clause, that all teams had the reserved right to retain you, that you couldn't just leave. And so he was traded from the Cardinals to the Phillies in the 70s, and he challenged, and he, like, it went to the Supreme Court and stuff, and they were right. Like, okay, this is on, you know, this is not okay. So that's when free agency started in the 70s. And that's when the money really started to escalate. Yeah, it was interesting to think about, like, the some of the great players, and that's the best they could do. Yes. Was, you know, especially way back when. And the other thing is they made a lot of money off of sponsorship and likeness for different things, especially when television came around. You know, Mickey Mantle endorses Gillette Shaver, you know, Joe DiMaggio, you know, Barbersol and, or Lucky Strike. And
didn't Babe Ruth have an issue with the candy bar, Baby Ruth?
You know, I don't know.
I think they did. Pretty sure.
You may have.
There's a lawsuit going on there.
I could take a look at that.
You have the trusty Wikipedia or the trusty internet here.
Yeah, well, it's worth a look. Babe Ruth versus Baby Ruth. All right, let's take a look. Ruth had his own candy bar.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they came out, like, at the same time as he was famous. I mean, you know, what a coincidence.
Well, let's see. It was claimed it was named after Ruth Cleveland, the granddaughter of President Grover Cleveland.
Mm.
Ruth.
A little bit of a stretch.
Right. The story goes, Ruth Cleveland visited the plant and while there inspired the name of the candy bar. Now, it says the main problem is that Ruth Cleveland died in 1904 at the age of 12 years old, some 17 years before the Baby Ruth candy bar was created.
The plot thickens.
And about 15 years before the Curtis Candy Company was created. So the Curtis Candy Company, which I guess is in charge of Baby Ruth at the time, was headquartered very close to Wrigley Stadium, also known as Wrigley Field. And in 1932, they set up a giant lit advertising sign near the spot where Babe Ruth's supposed called shot landed. The called shot in the 1932 World Series where he pointed to center field and was like, I'm going to hit a ball over there.
Was that not for the kid in the hospital too? Or was that just for the movie?
No, he's done that before where... Actually,
he's done it several times.
He's done it several... Players still do that. There was
they don't always... But he almost always connected, did he not?
He did, but it always...
The other people don't always...
No, recently, I believe it was Matt Kemp for the Dodgers. He said he was going to hit, like, I don't know if he said it or if one of the kids said, will you hit it for, you know, can you hit one
but
for me?
But the pitchers intentionally try to screw you, though, once
I
you
don't
do
think
that?
Well, they don't know. They're not like, wait, what did he say? You know, they usually don't think
but
about
if they
that
see
sort of
if they see the batter just, like, pointing to the sky, I mean, they're going to know what he means.
Well, if they do that, then that's a problem. Well, the reason Ruth did it in 1932 was because the Cubs players and the fans were mercilessly taunting him, shouting obscenities, and he just had enough of it. And he was yelling at them, too. He had hit a home run earlier in the game.
They tried to walk him, right? And he just hit the home run anyway.
Actually, I think the pitcher was trying to strike him out.
Oh, okay.
But there's footage of it that when he's... After he hits it, well, there's one picture that shows him pointing. It either looks like he's pointing to left field or to the Cubs bench. It doesn't look like he's pointing to center field. But in any case, there's film of him after he hits the home run. He's running around the bases, and he starts, like, waving his hand, like shoo,
okay,
at the Cubs bench. Like, you know, hey, see what you made me do? And as he's running third, he takes both hands, and he does a pushing motion, like a pushing motion with his hand. Be like, you pushed me. You push me, now I push back, and I hit this homer. That's what I do. So, you know, nobody knows for sure. It's more interesting what he was doing on the field before then than the actual, is it true or is it not true about the called shot. He was an interesting guy, that Babe Ruth, I'd say.
Yes, he's a fascinating man.
He is.
Did they ever find that piano at the bottom of the lake?
They did, and they restored it. That was what, because that was one of the things where, you know, for the Red Sox to end their streak was, hey, let's... Because he had a house in Massachusetts even after he was in New York. That's actually where his wife lived. I found out recently. His wife lived there with their adopted daughter. Meanwhile, he moved back down to New York. Yeah, so they stayed up there, but apparently after he was traded from the Red Sox, or sold from the Red Sox to the Yankees, he got so upset that he pushed the piano into the lake, and then they got it out and all this other stuff. They were doing anything they could, but they eventually won it. They won two, but that's been it since then.
You put any credence into curses or anything like that, Chad?
Well, as a fan, it's almost fun to think about the curse. Like, if you're on the bad end of the curse...
It's an excuse.
It's an excuse, And it, you know, there's just some, because sometimes, you know, it almost seems like the, sometimes it almost seems like the only explanation. If you look at the Red
Sox, it's like an even better excuse than like the man's holding me down, because the man is like a palpable thing. Like a curse is just like this thing that will just never go away. You know, it's right. Like just always there.
But the curse is there, but it always shows up in different ways. If you look at the Red Sox, there of course is 86 with Bill Buckner. So he was looked at as the sort of the embodiment of the curse, that the ball went under his legs. Mm-hmm. In 1975, Bucky Dent hits that. No, I'm sorry, not 1975. That's when they went to the World Series, which they should have won, but they didn't. I'm sorry, was it 78? 78. The one game playoff against the Yankees, Bucky right. Dent. So Bucky Dent was the embodiment of the curse. And then in 2003, when Pedro Martinez was pitching that game 7 in Yankee Stadium, and then the manager left them in, Grady Little. So Grady Little was the embodiment of the curse. And if you look at the Cubs, most recently in 2003, the guy in the stands, Steve Bartman.
Who cursed the Cubs?
Oh, this story. I think it was 1940.
Billy Corgan, the Billy Corgan curse.
No,
the Cubs?
No, no.
He's a Cubs fan, by the way.
He is. He's a big time.
He was a baseball captain when he was a teenager.
I did not know that.
That's in his Wikipedia. It must be true.
Yeah, no, I've been to two Smashing Pumpkins concert, and he always talks about the Cubs. But all right, the Cubs curse started 1946.
Yeah.
This was the season after they had won the National League pennant. So a local owner of a tavern, the Billy Goat Tavern, mm-hmm. Brings his prized Billy Goat because he wants to bring it into the stadium because it's a big celebration. It's opening. I know. It's so strange. It's opening day, and he wants to bring in, and they say, no, you can't bring your Billy Goat in.
Okay.
And it's the mascot of the local tavern, you know, near the stadium. And he's like, but I want to bring my Billy Goat in. Like, no, you can't bring it in. So he gets so upset that he curses the Cubs never to appear in the World Series again. Not just win, never go to the World Series again.
Wow.
Because they wouldn't let in his Billy Goat. So it's the curse of the Billy Goat.
Come on.
They've tried so many.
I was partly right. There's Billy in there somewhere.
But, no, you were right.
Come on.
It's
ridiculous. Ridiculous.
And again, the embodiment of that curse was in 2003 when
Just get a goat in there then. It makes them feel better. Just get a goat in there and just say, sorry, you know, and that's it.
They've tried so many. They've tried bringing other Billy Goats in. They've tried.
Hasn't worked.
They've tried the, like, descendants of his family, like, bring their Billy Goat.
Yes.
I don't know what it is.
Maybe they concentrate a little more on the baseball and then on the goat.
Yeah. They're trying. But they
have some budgetary issues, yeah. I'm not sure.
But they had it that one season, 2003, against the Marlins. A fan reaches over to catch this foul ball, and it's in foul territory, he's totally right. But the left fielder, Moises Alou, is underneath, or right fielder, he's underneath it, ready to catch it, and this guy, Steve Bartman, reaches out and he blocks it. Mm-hmm. And so Alou gets really upset, like, oh man, you can see him, like, on TV. Like,
Pinella?
No, Alou. Moises Alou.
Okay. Moises
Alou. He's like throwing his glove down. He's like, oh, he's freaking out. Like, I should have had that. And people are like, what the heck is going on? And then what happens is this rally starts and the Cubs lose the game. And this is game 6. But it's amazing because the broadcast keeps showing him.
Is that fan still alive?
Yes, he is. He has gone into hiding. Nobody can find him. Like one reporter, like one.
That's scary. Like people are that insane and superstitious. I thought somebody could die.
You need to see
over this insanity.
You need to see.
It's madness.
It's a documentary. They
we
did.
Live in a world of madness.
They did.
Why did you give me a microphone?
They did a documentary on this guy Bartman. It's a great documentary. I have to show it to you one time. And it talks about, because he's a fan, and he's one of those fans who has on, like, a Walkman. So he's listening to the broadcast. So he's basically listening to them talk about him as he's sitting there. And you see him for the rest of the game as the Marlins are coming back and they're taking the lead and they're building on their lead. In the same inning, he's just sitting there, and he's getting pelted with beer. And the Fox broadcast keeps showing him get lambasted.
It's over and over.
It was nuts. It really was crazy.
Oh boy.
So I mean, the curses, they're fun. You know, if you're not a fan of that team, they're fun. They're fun to think about.
Yeah.
They're fun to think, oh, you know, the White Sox didn't win all those years because of the Black Sox scandal. All the Red Sox didn't win because Babe Ruth's ghost is still haunting them. Oh, the Cubs are.
I'm a fan of sports, and I like sports. And I like all that stuff. And, you know, you obviously have your own sports podcast, so you're a big fan of sports, too.
Yes.
But I think, like, some people just go a little too far. And they're just, you know, when it gets to the point where you're pouring beer in people's heads and you're punching people in the jaw and you're and you want to kill somebody because you think they caught a ball in foul territory and they furthered a curse.
Yeah.
Or something. The guy's got to live in hiding or he's got to move. Just, I think, like, you know, sometimes some people need to reevaluate what's really important.
Well, they do. They do. And no, I agree with you. And, you know, that's not fun. Like, I love to go to baseball games, especially. And it's never fun to, you know, see, like, the fights break out. In a small way, it's kind of like, you know, or, oh, what, you know, what? Where's security? Yes. Like, you have that sort of, like, that rubbernecking. Like, what's going on over there? Oh, my God. Did you see that? Holy cow. But at the same time, because I've been near some of those people. And it's just like, this is not what I wanted to come here for. I might as well have just stayed home.
Yes.
But with baseball, it's fun to go to the park. It's the only sporting event. Football, because I've been to football games. Have you ever been to football games
before? I have not. I have not because, you know, apparently you have to have, like, lifetime seats or something or extremely right. expensive seats. I
well,
know,
he,
like thousands of dollars.
Yeah, because where we're based, we're nearest to New York, the New York teams.
Okay.
And they play in, you know, the new Giants Stadium. Yeah, I'm still going to call it Giants Stadium. But, yeah, I think it's one of the few franchises that have...
Is the new stadium still in Jersey?
Yes.
Ah,
yes.
Of course.
But there's a waiting list for tickets because your tickets get passed down in your family. So if you want season tickets, there's a waiting list. This mythical waiting list that thousands upon thousands of people in the tri-state area are on. So, but anyway, I mean, they're easy tickets to find sometimes, especially if the teams aren't doing too. Go to, like, the last game of the season.
Yeah, but if you want to see the games that count.
Well,
you
yeah,
want to be
absolutely.
There for, like, the Super Bowl.
Not very true.
I mean, there's just no way you're going to get a seat.
No, it's going to be very expensive at the very least.
Like give me a price range. Give me a price range for, like, good seats at the Super Bowl. Like, I want some
at
good seats.
The Super Bowl?
What's the point of going if I'm not going to get
thousands,
good seats?
Thousands. Thousands.
Give me that, but give me a range, man. 1,000, 5,000, 10,000.
Probably five.
$5,000.
Five. If you're talking
$5,000,
like 50-yard line.
My God,
I know, it's crazy.
Oh, forget it. This is just that's insane. Why would I want to do that? Nah. Why do I want to do that to myself? That's why I'll never be in a football game. Because, like, I don't know. It's almost out of principle. It's like you want to make this stuff, and then they have what do they call blackout dates and stuff too, or something. If not enough people buy tickets to the game, they won't even air it on television.
Yeah, it's an NFL. It's an old NFL rule that goes back to, like, the 20s and the 30s.
Yeah, I wish people would remember they have power as consumers. I would say no one go to football games anymore. Let them black all the games out. We'll see how long that
lasts.
Well,
at this point, the
you watch those tickets. You watch those ticket prices drop real fast, man.
Well, the home entertainment part of it has gotten so big that now people are worried that what's the point in going to a football game? Especially because it's during the winter, so depending on where you are, especially in the northern states, it's going to be cold on a Sunday. It's a whole day thing. The only real plus is you can barbecue or you can tailgate and stuff. But when you're at home, if you do fantasy sports like I do, you can, you know, take a look at all the other games that are going on, stats. If this game's boring, you can just turn the TV to watch a different one. Or if you just want to be at home.
It's
and
also
stuff.
Freedom, too. I mean, you know, when you're right. If you're at your comfort of your own home, you can have a nice big screen television. You can have a whole room dedicated to it. You could have surround sound. You could have the barbecue. You could have all the beer you want.
Right,
but do whatever you want.
Yeah,
instead you'd have to go. And then you're paying for the privilege of being controlled by somebody else at someone else's venue. And so, like, you know, and if the price is too high to pay, and if it's, like, you know, if it's almost impossible to get tickets, I mean, like, what's the point? I don't know.
It is what it is.
But, you know, people still go, so obviously it's definitely worth it.
The people definitely go.
Can you explain the lifetime ticket thing to me? Well, I know that there's people who keep tickets, like, in their family for generations or something.
I don't know
how that works.
They get passed down. Giants and Jets tickets, they get passed down within the family.
Don't they expire?
No.
I don't get it.
No, they only expire if you no longer pay for it. You get first rights. You know, like, okay.
So are these people paying, like, thousands of dollars a year to keep their tickets?
Yeah, especially because the Giants and the Giants and some of the Jet tickets have personal seat licenses. PSLs, personal seat license. So it's, you pay for the right to buy. It's an added bonus for the owners. It's a way to make more money.
Why?
So if you are a season ticket owner, yeah, and I come, you, okay, you want to buy more okay. seat, you want to buy your season okay. tickets again. Okay, you have to pay the PSL, which is, let's say, 500. So you pay that to me now. Now you can buy the ticket, which are, you know, say a couple hundred as well.
Right.
Somebody explained it, I think, in a really good way. It's kind of like when you go to a deli and you take a number.
Okay.
You have to buy that number first.
Right.
And then you buy whatever food you have.
Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
So it's a way to get money from the fans. But that's caused a lot of people to be like, you know what? That's too expensive. Why am I doing this?
You know what? Maybe I've never experienced the football games. Maybe I'm being a little too critical. You've experienced the football game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been there. So
yeah.
You tell me, is it worth it, all this hassle, to do all this just to see a football game that I could see on television?
Every week, no. for me, if I were to have the opportunity to get season, and believe me, I've been called by the Jets.
But that's a standard. It has to be good enough to want to go every week, because the NFL can't get by with like people just wanting to go to the rivalry games or just wanting to go to the playoff games. So it has to be good enough for you to want to, be able to go there every
week. For me, I know other Jet fans, but unless they were to come with me to the game and we were to tailgate all together and we were to go in and watch the games and we were to be able to sit together and chat and talk, you know, all that stuff during a football game and then leave and then, you know, maybe have a couple barbecue a little bit more on the way out and, you know, sit, talk about it and all that stuff and hang out. Okay, then I would definitely consider it. But right now, I'm the only one who would really be interested in going every single Sunday. I have a friend of mine whose family has season tickets. And they go, and they're like their neighbors that they know from the same town, and
right.
you know all the so people. It's a big, huge thing. Like 16 people, and they put out buffets, and they put out
because it's all the same people all the time. Exactly. It gets very clicky and very community like.
Exactly. So if anything, the game is kind of like, in the end, the game is, you know, an extra bonus.
The Schwarzbuckles have had the same five seats in the front row for the last 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And if you're not a Schwarzbuckle, you're never going to sit there.
Right.
It's just so un-American to me, you know? Like, I don't like
fair
it.
Fair enough. Don't have to.
Yeah. That's why I won't go.
No. But I would definitely suggest going maybe once. If you want to start off, preseason games, the season ticket holders get the tickets to preseason games. So those tickets are like free. People will give those away. So
okay.
Like a starter, like, oh, let's check this out. Okay, this is a pretty good seat. You know, what am I seeing? You know, the video boards over there. Okay, what's the food like? You know, what are the choices? How are the concourses? How are the seats? How are the coverage? You know, how cold is it? How warm it is? If it's a preseason game, it's warmer because it's August, September. So that might be a good way to be like, start like, all right, let's actually see what it is. But if you really want to get into it, and that's what I'm trying to say is, football games, you're constantly on the edge of your seat. Okay, what's happening in this play? What's happening on this? The great thing about baseball is you can sit back. Football, when you're sitting, it's a visual thing. When you're at a football game.
So you would say football game's more exciting than a baseball game.
It is more exciting. So at that point, yes, that might be worth it. But I'm not necessarily going to talk to you next to me. You know, the only time I would really talk to you is in between each player, between the periods. Well, it's like, all right, now we have a couple minutes before they start playing again. Or it's a TV timeout. Like,
it's just too bad it's not as accessible to so many people.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
I mean, you know, live games surprise you. You know, I went to races live. You know, it's a lot more fun live. The sounds are a lot louder. You can, you know, smell the smoke and the oil.
Exactly.
You know, when you have hockey games, you know, the fights are great. Yeah. And the games are exciting too. They're a lot of fun. They're a lot like we were talking about with the football, because you know the plays are very aggressive. You know, it's not like there's a lull or anything.
Very few. There are very few lulls.
Yeah.
And so, but football's the only one. There's only 8 games at home. There's only 8 home games. So every single game counts. Baseball, hockey, and basketball. There's so many games. It's like, all right, let's, you know, we didn't do it today. We'll do it next time. Baseball especially, because there's 82 home games. In hockey and basketball, there's 41. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, okay, it's a little bit more of a, all right, let's hurry up. But baseball, it's just sit back like, hey, you didn't do it today. We'll do it tomorrow.
So your show is called Everyman Sports, right?
Yes, yes.
So do you consider racing a sport?
Yeah, you would have to call them athletes, because unless there's a grossly out of shape person who plays the sport, they are athletes. And for a driver, there are no really out of shape people, obese people. So they have.
You know the reason I ask you, because you know we always get a lot of flack up here in the Northeast.
Yeah, it's not our.
These people making left hand turns for 500 miles and stuff.
It's not exactly our cup of tea up here. It's much more around the country. I mean, it encroaches in some parts, because over the border in Pennsylvania, there's the Pocono Speedway. Down in Delaware,
I've been there. Pocono.
There's the Dover Speedway, so it's kind of like right outside. And there's
Monster Mile, Dover. Yeah.
In New York State, what is it? In Ithaca or Troy? Mm-hmm. Way up there, I forget. But in any case, so it encroaches upon, you know, the metropolis that is New York City. At the same time, it's kind of distant to us, because it's much more across the rest of the nation. It's a big deal. I look at, is it a sport if the human participants are athletic enough to do it? Because you're inside a very, you're inside of a suit. It's really hot in there. You're inside of a car. You have you have to have the reflexes to hit the brake. If there's a crash up ahead, you drive through it. You go around it. You have split
also
seconds.
You have to have the stamina to understand the G-forces too. I mean, to withstand the G-forces. There's a lot of
stamina.
Lot of for instance, the Indy racers couldn't even race at Texas Motor Speedway because the banking was so sharp that they were blacking out in the turns. They were blacking out, and they were, you know, they were crashing. They were getting disoriented. They had to stop. They could. It was just too much.
Exactly. And you know, you make a great point, because again, you have to have that physical ability.
Exactly.
You have to be in shape to do it. You have to be able. You can't just be
whether you're driving a stock car or an Indy car. It's the same thing.
We all drive cars. Right. Those of us who have cars and have
licenses. Drive cars, but we also all like, you know, swing golf tees and swing bats too. You know, most of us are capable of that.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean we're all athletes.
So would I consider it a sport? Yes, I would consider it a sport.
I would too. I just think it gets a bad rap. My dad used to race professionally. I think it gets a very bad rap.
Well, it's pigeonholed. The southerner, the less than intelligent rube races cars and like, but that's not always true.
No, not always true. It's not always true, and you know, it's just very interesting. That's all, to see some people, you know, consider one thing a sport, and then like, you know, what they don't like. I think like a lot of it too is like culturally, like maybe racing is looked at as like a hick sport or something like that.
Well, it started from moonshine runners.
Absolutely, it did.
You know, who said like my car's faster?
Yeah, and then they started race on the beach at Daytona.
Yeah,
that's what they did. And that's where it started. But you know, I mean, you know, there's racing all over the world. There's racing in Europe. There's racing in South America. There's
Formula One.
Absolutely.
It's like royalty over
absolutely.
In Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big deal, so.
Absolutely. Anybody over there who thinks Formula One is somehow better than stock cars, remember, they both race on circuits and ovals.
Right.
They both do. They both race on both. So
good point.
But
it's interesting, yeah. All right, well, I want to thank you very much, Chuck, for joining me on this episode of Everyman Sports. Thank you again for listening. I'm sorry I've been away for a while. I hope to have some more episodes. It might not be as often as it has been in the past, but I'll continue. If you'd like to listen to more, you can find us on iTunes under Everyman Sports. You can go to our website, everymansports.podbean.com. You can email me at everymansports@gmail.com. One word, everymansports@gmail.com. And you can like us and contact us on Facebook at Everyman Sports as well. So thank you very much, Chuck. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and take care. Bye.